Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in.
Before diving into the episode on high hamstring strains, I want to talk about something that can really impact our hamstring health and function, which is what we wear on our feet. If you're wearing shoes that don't allow your feet and ankles to work properly, it can really impact you all the way up the chain. And that's why Jen and I use Vivo barefoot shoes. It has zero heel drop, so it's really going to challenge that posterior chain in your body to work throughout its full range. Our feet are so important to our health and our movement, and that is why Jen and I use Vivo barefoot shoes. We literally use them for everything. There are slippers you can wear in home. There are shoes you can wear for casual wear. There are workout shoes. There are even dress shoes, hiking shoes, water shoes. They have them for every occasion. If you haven't tried Vivo barefoot shoes yet, we really, really recommend to try them out. You will feel the difference in your body. And if you go down to the link in the show notes, we have a code that is special for our podcast guests only. It's 15% off using code TOB at checkout. So go to the link in the show notes, make sure you use code TOB at checkout, and get yourself in some barefoot shoes. Okay, so today's pearl is on high hamstring strains, which is also known as proximal hamstring tendinopathy. And that word tendinopathy basically just means dysregulated tendon or abnormal tendon. And this tends to be more of an overuse injury, and it can feel really like a pain in the butt because that's exactly where it is. It's right at the top of those hamstrings, kind of where you feel that knobby sit bone that you sit on, called our ischial tuberosity, which is where our common hamstring tendon attaches into.
And because it's a tendinopathy, something that's overused and, you know, tends to develop over time, it takes time to get rid of these as well and to overcome this pain and symptoms that you're having. And I know, you know, we've even have a very close friend where she's complained about this for a long time. And I'm like, this is the structure of what you have to follow. And it's going to take time, just like it took time to come on.
Yeah. And again, being an overuse injury, it tends to have to do with activities that you do on a consistent basis. It's something that is highly re-irritable. So you see, often see a high rate of re-injury when people have this. They seem to get better from it, and then it happens again, often because the rehab that they may have done, you know, didn't actually heal the issue. The symptoms just went away, but the underlying issue still remained. It can also be seen as a deceleration injury, which what that means is, like, if you're somebody who runs a lot, especially if you sprint a lot, it's actually when you're slowing yourself down, because that hamstring, the proximal portion of it, or the portion that attaches right up into your butt, is lengthening as you're slowing your body down. Just want to take a quick pause from the episode here to talk about one of our podcast sponsors, Element, which is our absolute favorite electrolyte drink that Jen and I use every single day with its special combination of sodium, potassium, and magnesium. It's going to make sure to keep you hydrated on that cellular level. Literally, Jen and I can't even drink regular water anymore and feel as hydrated as we do when we have Element. It also tastes so good. And the reason it's so important to replenish these electrolytes is because sodium, magnesium, and potassium are so important for many cellular processes within the body. It can help with things like brain fog, and it can help with being regular in the bathroom, getting regular sleep, and so much more, like muscle cramps and consistent muscle contractions. We would recommend everyone give it a try. And with every single order, you get a free sample pack that allows you to try all of Element's different incredible flavors so that you know which one you like best for when you are convinced to go back and buy more because you realize the difference that it makes in your body. So go down to the link in the show notes. It's just drinkelement.com. That's L-M-N-T, drinkelement.com/optimal. Let's get back into the podcast. And when we get that eccentric lengthening where we're loading it as that muscle is stretching really quickly, that is a very vulnerable place for a muscle or a tendon to be, which is why we often see these types of injuries in sprinters, people who, you know, perform sprint type activities or athletics like basketball, tennis, where you're changing direction and sprinting and slowing down rapidly, accelerating and decelerating your body.
Now, when we look at recovery, especially in the research, we can say anywhere from 23 days to 50 weeks, and there's a high reoccurrence rate in between. So this is why we really are going to go through the four phases of, you know, recovery from a high hamstring strain, because honoring each phase is really important to reduce that risk of having it happen again, you know? And so I think that's what's really important, is understanding how to move along these phases and what you're really looking for in each one.
Yeah, it's interesting, because when we start talking about this and talking about the people who are at risk, you know, well, it's people with hypermobility, but again, those sprint type athletes, people who have poor warm-ups or cool downs, people who don't have great core hip coordination. And I actually dealt with some high hamstring issues when I was in like middle school track, because I was a sprinter. And I remember, like, I'm going to be honest, I kind of peaked athletically in middle school, seventh and eighth grade, because I was an early maturer. So I was hitting some of my like peak times in seventh and eighth grade while everyone else was still like pre-puberty. And then everyone else grew up. And I remember it was the most devastating thing, because I had this high hamstring pain when it was like the conference finals for track in eighth grade. And I had basically swept all of my events when I was in seventh grade conference finals. And I finished like third, fourth, fifth in most of my events because I had this injury, but I was too stubborn to sit out. So I kept doing it. But thinking about eighth grade Dominic, I definitely had poor core hip coordination. I was a sprint athlete who probably wasn't warming up and cooling down well. And then I got an injury.
Well, and I think beyond just like the warm up and the cool down, you know, I know, especially from your history, that that core coordination, you know, has been something that you've kind of worked through and really come to own, I would say.
I was going to say still struggle with.
I think you have, I mean, a lot better grasp and awareness of it. But having that maybe when you were developing as well, and not having that awareness.
Definitely.
As we wouldn't in middle school and junior high. Definitely not. But that could obviously play a role. And so understanding and gaining awareness of our body is so crucial, and something we do in all our gen health plans.
Okay, so now we want to spend the bulk of this episode on like the phases, kind of the rehab phases that you should be going through. And of course, these will be slightly different depending on the severity of injury. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's excruciating pain, or, you know, to the point where you have a second, third degree tear versus a strain, going to be very different rehab protocol. So this is more so a strain with no major tendon or muscle damage. Phase one, as is the phase for most injuries, is calm it down. How do we calm that thing down? This is the phase where we might need to do some sort of activity modification, find a way to be putting less pressure, less stretch and strain on those hamstring tendons, paying attention to how we're sitting or standing throughout the day even, and then just focusing on some of that basic mobility. So some of the things that you could start to do are just laying on your back, hamstring kicks, feeling how that hamstring feels throughout the range, even sitting with your heels up on a wall, kind of doing a wall hamstring stretch. That can be very relaxing for the legs, but also just start to get that hamstring to lengthen a little bit and let go.
Well, and we know that the first load of tension we put into a tendon is a stretch.
Yeah, it's a stretch.
Right? And making sure that we're not going aggressive. This is not where we're trying to like gain the most flexibility or anything. It's just starting to put a little load and tension into that hamstring. And then I would say, just like you said, like legs up a wall, but using that breath to really calm things down and send different signals into the muscle, you know, is so crucial.
And if you're doing that well, if you're doing that stretch while doing that breathing, you're activating the core. So you're already starting to lay some of the groundwork for that core hip or that core hamstring coordination, where, okay, I'm letting my hamstring lengthen, but I'm also engaging and activating throughout my core. Same with hamstring kicks. You don't want to be kicking your leg and holding your breath and bearing down. You want to be kicking and breathing, feeling our ribs expand, feeling our core contract, all that kind of stuff, because you're going to, again, start laying the groundwork for phase two, three, and four.
Right. And I would say, you know, touching a little bit more on the compressive nature of things. So if we have a very sedentary job, how can we create things like standing more than sitting? Because yeah. that's putting that pressure. I mean, ideally, we're sitting more so on our sit bones, which that's right where that attachment is. So how can we reduce some of that tension just from those compressive overloads of sitting so much throughout the day? And sitting is one of the things that is a risk factor as well for leading into high hamstring strains or the recurrence of high hamstring strain. So just really paying attention to like, how often am I sitting? What kind, if I have to sit at a desk, can I ask my boss, hey, can I bring in a ball right now? So I'm sitting on something a little squishier. Can I sit on a gorgeous ball where it can take a little load off of my ischial tubes, mm-hmm. you know? So how can we set up our space to look a little different during this phase one time to give your body a chance to then mold into phase two, which is getting into progressive loading. And now this is where we're really starting to do what are called isometric exercises. So that is not moving, but starting to create load and tension. And so this can look, you know, as simple as your feet on a wall and starting to just barely lift your hips. So you're in like a 90-90 position and you're doing a yeah. wall bridge, but you don't have to go all the way up. You're just starting to press your whole foot into the wall and get used to driving those heels down and feeling what that pressure is. If you hold and take some deep breaths with your tailbone kind of barely coming off the floor there.
Yeah, and any other way that we can really get those that isometric activation in would be great to explore. Because again, now we're starting to put a little more load through those hamstrings. And how can we do it at slightly different angles? Mm-hmm. Like we mentioned kind of the wall hamstring stretch, like can you put one of your legs up, maybe the affected side on the wall, and just push down into it? So we're at a little more of that stretch, and now we're trying to push into it, or just put your leg up on a chair and then push down into it. And you're going to be activating that hamstring at different angles, which mm-hmm. I also think is important that we start to train and strengthen and put load through that hamstring at different angles.
And going along with all of that too, rather than just using, you know, something external, we can even lay on our stomach and start to get better hip extension. So get bringing those legs up and holding at a range. Mm-hmm. Not only are we going to start to work that hamstring and hold, still doing those isometrics, but then we're going to start to build in that intra-abdominal pressure as well. Because yeah. rather than just getting into my low back, I want to kind of stabilize it through my trunk a little bit better. When I lift my legs and hold, I'm getting glutes, I'm getting outer core, I'm getting inner core, and I'm breathing and holding with that. So it's a great way to start to kind of repattern this abdominal and core control for our pelvis as we're going to go through movement, which we can also use by just slowing down basic body weight movements, right? Yeah. Getting into a hip hinge in a load, in an area or range of motion that feels tolerable for you right now, yeah. but starting to slow it down, maybe holding in different lengths and saying, can I breathe from my rib cage and make sure that my rib cage and pelvis is kind of moving together as I do these certain movement patterns, and starting to retrain and rebuild how you're moving.
Yeah. And again, in this phase two, when we're just starting to load and starting to go through movement, being able to be more aware of that core yeah. and how it's coordinated with the hips is so important, because as soon as we start to load things up, as soon as we start to go through movements a little bit faster, that's where we might start reverting to our old patterns. Mm-hmm. So taking your time during this phase two to really go through, coordinate the core with the hip movement as we're in this still kind of early healing phase, before we go into phase three, which would be more isotonic loading or loading through movement. Mm-hmm. And this is where we're going to start to progressively increase weights, doing more basic lower body exercises like squats and deadlifts and things like that.
And this is where it becomes really crucial to pay attention to your range of motion, especially if you're a hypermobile person, not just going right into it, but slowing things down. This is so yeah. huge. So starting to work on that strength through that length is really important. And this can look as basic as starting with, you know, doing some banded kicks to your bottom. So whether you're standing or whether you're laying on your yeah, stomach,
like you a have hamstring curl.
Yeah, you have a band around your heel and you're bringing it into your bottom and then slowly letting it release yeah. and working on that long eccentric control. But really, when we're talking about that high hamstring strain, again, that's good for the hamstring muscles, but we need to be working on that hip hinge to start to get used to that tendon reloading in that flexion to extension pattern at that hip. So that's where working on deadlifts, whether it's banded deadlifts, you know, you kind of have a band around your, and you're going down into your length, your range of motion that feels comfortable in nice and slow, and then standing back up, you know. So starting to load even with resistance bands can be a great place to start.
Yeah. And as you start to load and get more comfortable, you're going to progress in the weight, but then you can also progress to doing single leg type activities where it might look like a reverse lunge, because rather than doing a forward lunge where people tend to be a little more quad dominant in a forward lunge, you can do a reverse lunge and then be pulling through that hamstring as you stand back up. You can do this a single leg deadlift, or more of the Romanian deadlift where it's a straight leg, single leg deadlift. And as, again, you get comfortable with the movements, how can we start to increase the explosiveness, right? So like Jen said, generally going nice and slow on the eccentric or the lengthening phase of the exercise, that's great. But then can we explode through the concentric phase, or when we are contracting through those hamstrings? Because that's going to start to simulate those activities like sprinting, where we explode through the step and then want to control the deceleration when we're lengthening in that eccentric phase.
Yeah, and starting to build the endurance of our glutes to help assist with the hamstring. So it's not always the hamstring that's doing the work. And this might, you know, mean that we're going to have to kind of gain that awareness and that coordination of how we feel those glutes working. And that's where I really come back to this inner core concept and understanding our intra-abdominal pressure, because when we can start to, you know, get this inner core working better, we get the outer core, our obliques, our glutes kind of working in combination so that the legs can do what they're supposed to do. So getting that trunk support is so huge and so key in this rehab process, and starting to gain that awareness under load, under functional exercises that you might not think are core based, but when we have better awareness and attention to them, they really are. And that's what, again, you know, I talk about this plan a lot, the full body low impact plan, because for those who want to be doing strength work and those who want to be doing exercise and understand this within their body, that's where I talk through these things so big.
I think the full body low impact plan would be like the perfect encapsulation of phase three. Like, how do we start to integrate that core hip coordination, start to progressively strengthen and load through the hips? And then phase four, I would almost say, shift yourself over to the full body high impact or high intensity plan on Gen Health, because that's where it uses more of the HIIT style workout, where you're going to start going into plyometrics, because phase four is, okay, plyometrics. How do we start training everything we've worked on in phase one through three into more of that sport or activity specific exercise that we want to get back to, whether that's running, whether that's jumping, playing basketball, tennis, whatever it may be. And this generally looks like some sort of plyometric training where we're starting with 2 foot, you know, jumping and landing type exercises, and then starting to integrate different planes of motion. So can we do lateral jumps? Can we do rotational jumps? Again, it depends on what your goal is. What are you looking to get back to? And can we train that in a more controlled environment so that once we get back into the exercise or on the street running or on the court, our body's more prepared?
And it really is like, we are going to continue to talk about these phases of treatment for almost every kind of injury. They kind of play a role in trying to focus on the same things, where we're improving our flexibility, our range of motion, but also our control of mobility within that range of motion, especially for hypermobile people. We're building our strength both in a controlled manner and building that mind-body connection through isometrics, and then through, you know, more explosive loaded type movements, and then going into those plyometrics and multi-planar directions. Like this, we always kind of follow the same pattern when we're thinking about this. And this is why we say you want to honor that entire progression so that you help to reduce, you know, the reoccurrence of it all. And when we're talking about like pain tolerance to this, because it's not necessarily that you're not going to have pain as you're redoing and kind of learning these movement patterns again, but we want to look at, okay, am I experiencing a level that's about 3 out of 10 as I'm moving through this. And it doesn't increase directly after an exercise, and it doesn't increase 24 hours after an exercise, right? You might feel soreness, but hopefully we start to understand the difference between muscle soreness and actually having that pain high into that hamstring, into that glute area. So having the difference between those two and making sure that we're staying at a very low level of pain tolerance, you know, it can help us guide, okay, I can tolerate a little bit more, I can lift a little bit more, or maybe I need to back off a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's a super important point to follow, especially in tendinopathies. We really haven't like damaged the muscle to a significant extent. It's just the reorganization, and the tendon needs to reorganize in order to ultimately kind of solve the underlying issue or the root cause of why that tendon was disorganized in the first place. And we need to load that. And sometimes it might be minimally uncomfortable, but we should be experiencing more soreness, especially as we get in the later phases. And I love how you pointed that out. Like, the phases for healing or rehab of any injury in my shorthand are calm it down, get it mobile, get it strong, coordinate it, and then sport or activity specific, right? And if you follow those, depending on how you tolerate each stage, you might be in one stage longer than the other, or you might progress to the later stages a little more quickly, you're going to find a successful plan on how to solve the underlying issues, solve the root causes, so that you don't become somebody who has these reoccurring high hamstring strains.
And when we look at some of like the research examples of what we should be doing, or what we can follow and kind of look at, you know, in a study from White et al. In 2011, they looked at high hamstring tendinopathies in three female long distance runners. And what we're really considering treatment for hypermobile, but not directly transferable to possibly everyone, right? But what they saw was that all of the female runners that they looked at kind of displayed weakness in their hip abductors, which are your glutes, their pelvic joint dysfunction, hamstring tightness, and ischial tuberosity tenderness. So looking at like the bone that was high in your sit bone, kind of having some tenderness to the touch there. And they really focus on active exercises like hamstring stretching and strengthening, gluteal strengthening, proprioceptive training. So where your body is in space and gaining that awareness. Plus they use some assisted soft tissue mobilization, lumbopelvic manipulation, which we've had a podcast that kind of highlights and indicates what, you know, that manipulation or adjustments really are doing within the body, electrical stimulation with ultrasound, which we should do a podcast on this, I think, with what ultrasound is really doing and electrical stimulation to really help to understand this. But when they looked at these three runners and did and kind of followed this protocol, they found that there is a resolution in the hamstring pain in an average of 13 treatments, and they were able to continue to compete without restriction. So, you know, really focusing on the whole complexity of a rehab process. Yeah. And I would say the strengthening and the stretching probably more beneficial than some of the work. Yeah. But what we know from manual work or having other things is that it helps to calm symptoms down so that you can keep working on strengthening.
For sure. And I think I like this study because it points out that not everybody is going to spend a lot of time or any time doing a strict phase one calm it down. It doesn't sound like they spent much time really offloading. Instead, they just altered what they were doing. It was more of the activity modification. And these are runners who, maybe they had pain, but as soon as they started doing some of the things, you know, maybe the soft tissue mobilization, manipulation, some of the electrical stimulation helped calm things down enough to the point that they could do all of these strengthening exercises, the proprioceptive training, that's going to really help with the coordination aspect that we were talking about. So it kind of outlines a different way that somebody worked through those four phases of rehab in 13 sessions and ultimately got back to doing their activity without any restriction. And we briefly mentioned Gen Health, the platform, and how the full body low impact plan, full body high intensity plan could be great pieces of this type of rehab. Also, during phases one and two, you've got the HIIT plan or even the full body mobility plan that can really help you during that calm it down and gain mobility phase in your rehab. So you could use Gen Health to assist and supplement through your entire rehab phase, you know, while you're working on hamstring strains. And for our podcast guests, if you haven't ever checked out the free week trial, please go do that. And also, if you use code OPTIMAL when you sign up, you'll get a discount off your first month. So we'll have a link down in the show notes if you are interested in diving in and checking that out.
Thanks so much for joining us on another episode. I hope you learned a ton. Share this with anyone who you know is going through having that high hamstring strain, or they continue to have it reoccurring and they're working through it. Send this over to them so they can understand the phases to work through. And of course, dive into Gen Health. That HIIT plan is going to be huge, so beneficial. Same with the full body low impact and full body high intensity as you continue to work through those phases.